MikeOmeraShow.com with the best talent on the air.
Welcome back to the Mike O'Mara Show, and now let's bring on Mr. Mark Fisher. He is a senior editor at the Washington Post, and the big story last week was Donald Trump with the name John Miller posing as a publicist. It was very funny.
Hello?
Hey, Mark Fisher, Mike O'Mara from the Mike O'Mara Show. How are you, my friend?
Very well, and you?
Doing well. Long time no chat. Always good to have a guy who is as old as I am on the show. And
rare opportunity.
Rare opportunity. Seems like everybody's getting younger, Mark. The big story, Donald Trump allegedly calling reporters in the 80s and 90s using a fake name. One reporter was Susan Carswell from People Magazine. And the reason we have you on the show today to talk about this is because this does not fall into the same category of all the other political stuff. This falls into the category of funny. I will be honest with you, Mark. I could not hear this story or listen to those tapes without laughing out loud. And it got a couple of news cycles. Were you surprised? You probably have a sense of these things, being at it as long as you have with the Post. Did you have a sense that this was going to be pretty significant and last a couple of news cycles last week?
Yeah, we had a sense that at least the recording would go viral. You know, this story of Trump masquerading as other people and as his own PR person, that's been out there for 25, 35 years right. Because he used to do this quite routinely. He would call reporters and editors in New York, and speaking in his very distinctive Donald Trump voice, he would say all sorts of wonderful things about all these women who were pining for Donald Trump. And it became kind of a running joke among those reporters and editors, and some of them wrote about it back in the mid-'80s. You could actually go back and find some of the original pieces. So this was no secret. The big difference maker here was getting the recording, because it's one thing to read about a guy who is doing something dishonest. It's another thing to actually hear the creepiness of him pretending to be someone else and going on and on about what a babe magnet Donald Trump was.
Well, I want to ask you, and I want to start with that, because I'll start by asking you about, and you probably can't answer one way or the other because you've got to protect your sources, but from the article, the Post obtained the recording from a source who provided it on the condition of anonymity. Carswell, Susan Carswell, who was the writer for People, shared the microcassette of the call with this source shortly after the interview. Now, Susan Carswell has been on some national programs stating that her theory is that Trump may have provided the tapes to you guys. I don't know whether you can confirm or deny that.
I can categorically deny that. That is just utterly absurd. I mean, it doesn't make the slightest bit of sense. Why would he hand out a recording that makes him appear to be dishonest and on which he sounds somewhat disturbed? So no, that did not happen. What happened is we had done this reporting on his use of the names John Barron and John Miller in phone calls to reporters. We had already spoken to a bunch of reporters and editors from that time in New York. We'd also spoken to several high-ranking Trump Organization former executives who said they were in the office or right outside Trump's office when he was making those calls as John Barron, and they heard it. So we had all of that in the book that we're writing, the biography that we're writing of Donald Trump, and that was ready to go.
There's a scoop. I didn't even know that. Yeah. You're writing a bio about Donald Trump. Is it going to come out before the election?
Yeah, August 23rd. Trump revealed, and it is a project of the Washington Post with Scribner's, and we have 24 Washington Post reporters who are exploring every aspect of his life, from where his ancestors grew up in Germany and Scotland. We sent reporters there to write about the immigration story of this family, all the way up through his Atlantic City years. We sent reporters to probe the finances of his casino operations in New Jersey and their collapse and everything in between. And so that's where we stumbled upon this story of him as John Barron, and we were exploring that. And then all of a sudden, I got a call last Monday from an old friend from college who said, hey, I know you're working on this project. Would you be interested in a recording showing Donald Trump masquerading as his own PR guy?
And wow.
I said, being a crackerjack reporter, I said, yes, I would be interested in such a recording.
Oh, this is so great, Mark. This is interesting when you talk about this. Hey, were you in on the 44-minute call with the Post last week where,
no, that,
where Trump hung up?
That was two of our other reporters who were working on that Atlantic City part of the story, and they were talking to him about his finances. And in that weird Trump way, he was at once extremely cooperative and forthcoming, and going through all the finances with them in detail. And then he could get very upset about things, and he ended up hanging up on them when they asked about this John Miller story.
And when he was on, I heard the live interview on the Today Show when they, they called him on that, and it kind of started out with a denial, and then he came back on, and he, it started out where he didn't know it, he didn't recognize
sure
it.
At first.
He wasn't sure, and then it was like somebody was in his ear saying that was not me, categorically. It just, I don't know. When you said, well, why would he do that? Have you ever seen anything like this campaign? Have you ever seen? I don't know whether I'm being played or manipulated. I mean, you talk about these things that happen with Donald Trump, but you see certainly among his base that his numbers continue to go up. Mm-hmm. And now you if you believe recent polls, the polls between Clinton and Trump get closer and closer. I've never seen anything like this. It Teflon, they used to call, the Don, the Teflon Don. But the fact is, this guy, nothing sticks. There's nothing that seems to stop the momentum.
Right, because everything that would the ordinary rules absolutely don't apply, because there have been at least 20 things that he's done or said in the last year that would have been disqualifying for a traditional politician. But the reason people are supporting him in good part is because he does not play by the rules. And so
right.
When he says things that aren't quite true, or when he says things that are completely outrageous, that becomes evidence that he is not one of them. And therefore, it helps him rather than it hurts him. And he's keenly aware of this, and he's really struggling now trying to figure out, how do I become a more plausible presidential candidate who's acceptable to all of the kinds of people who you would actually have to work with as president, while not sending the message to his loyalists that he's betraying them. And that is a very difficult conundrum that he has right now. And so you see him kind of stumbling around. He wants to reel back the things he said about banning Muslims, and he wants to reel back the things he said about different kinds of people, women and minorities and so on, and he doesn't quite know how to do it. So you see him on the same day lately saying one thing and then saying sort of the opposite, and it's going to be very interesting to watch that play out in the next couple months.
Yeah, go ahead, Rob.
Since you are writing and you're involved in the writing of this biography, obviously you're very in tune with Trump as a guy and his personality. Do you think, and this is a thought that I've heard several people echo, do you think when he announced his candidacy, do you think that Trump thought he would go this far?
No. So we've spoken to several people around him who were in on those early conversations, and what they tell us is that he initially thought he would shake things up, he would force the conversation towards some of the issues that he had been upset about and concerned about, and he thought he could be a bit of a wild card, but he just did not have the sense that he could blow through that whole field of 17 candidates. And there was a moment of realization, 3 or 4 months ago, where they woke up and they said, "Oh my gosh, we're going to win this thing."
Yeah, it's happening.
And it's happening. And that came as a considerable shock to them. And you saw that moment where he said, "Oh, we've got to get some people in here who know how to do this." And so they started hiring some more traditional political types. But it is still a seat of the pants operation. I mean, the press operation for the Trump campaign consists of one, maybe one and a half people, whereas in any other campaign of that size, it would be dozens of people. Mm-hmm. And so they are still trying to operate as if it's just Donald in his office with a couple of assistants, the way he does everything else.
Absolutely incredible. I I'm stunned by this. We're talking with senior editor at the Washington Post, Mark Fisher. By the way, full disclosure, Mark Fisher for years wrote a column called The Listener that said both good things and bad things about yours truly. But just want to make sure that we're on the record. He also wrote about a million other things at the Washington Post. Probably one of the most widely, you know, you've covered more stories about a variety of different things than anybody at the Post. And it's great having you on. Oscar, you had a question for Mark Fisher.
Mark,
as well.
I've mentioned on the show before. And you know, I've been a guy who went on record that I didn't think he would make it to the first debate. And now we're here and he's the presumptive nominee for the Republican Party. Do you think regardless of the outcome of this this election, he still won? He still won as far as influence is concerned. The power he wields, he's whether he loses, he still technically won overall. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. He has changed the face of American politics, not just for this season, not just for this year, but for years to come. There's a historian at Harvard named Jill Lepore who wrote a terrific piece in The New Yorker a few weeks ago about how every couple of generations, the political parties in this country kind of change identities. You know, if you think back just to the 1960s, the Democrats were the party of Southern white racists, right? And that flipped. And that kind of huge flip in what the parties stand for and who they are happens every, you know, 30, 40, 50 years. And it looks like Donald Trump is going to be the reason it happens again. You can't conceive of the Republican Party coming out of this being exactly what they were a year ago. And the Democrats will have to react in similar fashion. So this is a sea change that he has started because he tapped into this deep sense of frustration and betrayal that Americans across party lines feel about the way their jobs have been shipped overseas, the way the promise of the middle class, the promise of mobility, all of that seems to have collapsed, and neither party was doing anything about it. They weren't even talking about it, and along comes Donald Trump, and he just becomes the vessel for all of that frustration, and now the whole system has to adapt to that.
Before we let you go, I want to get back to the article that we were discussing with the tapes. In your article, I'll quote from it here. Some reporters found the calls from Miller or Barron, he used both John Barron and John Miller, disturbing or even creepy. Others thought they were just examples of Trump being playful. My question to you, Mark, do you think that Trump did this as a joke? Do you think there was a playful element to this, or was the narcissism so significant that he really thought that he was pulling one over on these reporters?
I mean, yes to both.
Yes to both. Okay.
He's having, as you listen to that tape, you can't possibly conclude anything other than he's having a ball.
Yeah.
He's absolutely loving the hell out of it.
Right.
And there's almost, and what people who find it creepy point to is this John Miller going on about Donald Trump's sexual prowess and appeal. There's almost a phone sex quality to sitting there and talking about this, right? I mean, he is absolutely reveling in the description of how Madonna was interested in him and Carla Bruni was interested in him. And, of course, he's doing this through this alter ego, this other identity, and
right.
That's what gives it this weird quality.
Is there any proof at all that there is, I just have to ask this, is there any proof at all that there is a John Miller or a John Barron that was employed by the Trump organization?
There is a guy named John Miller in New York who was a TV reporter and then was the spokesman for the New York Police Department, but he has nothing to do with this John Miller.
Wow.
There's no prominent John Barron that we know of, but the name John Barron is actually a constant theme in Donald Trump's life, and a strange theme. He has had this fascination with the name Barron for decades.
Wow. That's what scares me. That's the kind of stuff that scares me.
Yeah.
I mean, it just, I don't know. I'm like everybody else. I am so fascinated. If you did my searches over the last year, you would find more for Donald Trump issues than anything else. I think I'm like a lot of Americans when I do that. But it's at the same time where I'm fascinated, I think a lot of people like me, I'm a little scared at the same time.
Well, you have
time
to understand what horrifies you. That helps diffuse it.
When I hear that John Barron thing, it's like, oh, he was fascinated with the name John Barron, and then he will call the Barron wing of the White House. It's just scary.
Yeah.
Have you gotten any pushback from the Trump people? I know he tends to do that with reporters.
Yeah, he actually tends to be very gracious and kind with reporters in person. private and then smashes them to smithereens in public. So he has been cooperating with our biography. He has us back to his office time and again. He's very forthcoming when we ask him questions. He got upset about this John Miller thing, and he hung up on our reporters, but he's been extremely cooperative. And then later the same day, he'll call some other paper and bash our project and our book to them. So he has this theory that he's had since he started off in business when he was under the tutelage of Roy Cohn, the famous New York lawyer.
Wow. Right. I forgot he was under the tutelage of Roy. Anybody that's over the age of 50 knows who Roy Cohn is, and it's that. Just look him up. Google Roy Cohn, and you'll find out everything you need to find out. Go ahead.
Roy Cohn and Joe McCarthy, right? And yeah. And one of the things that Cohn taught him was always attack, never defend. And his whole philosophy of dealing with the press is, first of all, there's no such thing as bad press. Anything, notoriety is just as good as praise. And so he will take it all, and he will talk to anyone. On the other hand, he's kind of thin-skinned, and when he's criticized, he will lash out. And so you have both of those kind of conflicting forces going on at the same time.
Here's just a quick question. You referred to yourself as a crackerjack reporter. I got to know, on a personal level, how cool is it when a story that you're responsible for breaking is in the opening sketch of Saturday Night Live? Because news is news, but when it becomes a part of Saturday Night Live, you are forever in pop culture.
That was very cool, yeah. And then, in fact, I was coming home that evening, and my wife said, we ought to watch Saturday Night Live. They have to be doing something about this. And, in fact, they did it in the opener, and then the first several jokes on the Weekend Update were about this. So that was certainly
That's so awesome. Cool. Congratulations.
And, last question for you, Mark. Are there any other stories that you're aware of in the on the campaign that are in the pipeline? As far, I know you're doing the bio on him, but you always hear campaigns saying, either with Hillary or with Trump, that, hey, we're holding on to something that's going to be a big mm-hmm. deal. And I think about his taxes. I think about the fact that he hasn't released the returns. Do you think there's something else, whether it's the taxes, whether it's something else that could be significant for the Teflon Donald?
Well, I think there are a lot of things that are coming out. We're not holding anything back. As soon as we find stuff out, we're putting it right in the paper, and we're working on a number of stories that'll be unfolding over the next few weeks that we hope to be able to get in that do deal with his finances and do deal with just how much money does he have now, for example, is I think a really important question since he's gone around saying he's this multi-billionaire. So we're looking into those issues, and we'll be reporting about them. And I think there are, significant questions on both candidates, and we're exploring all of that. So, we do not hold stories back for dramatic impact, at a later date or anything like that. When the story's nailed down, we run it.
And the last thing I'll ask you about is, because you've written a book about it, the state of radio. What's your feeling on the state of radio as it is today?
Well, we're on a podcast, and millions of people are listening to podcasts right now, and so there's turmoil, and there's all kinds of movement among different kinds of audio experiences. But clearly, people want to listen to something, whether they're in the car or out for a run or whatever, and so we're in this moment of it's very similar to what's happening in print journalism. We're in this moment, or journalism at all, where there are many, many startups and lots of different options that people have, and that's great because the more choices and the more creative content out there, the better. But the business model part of it is still very much troubled, very much up in the air. And so for radio, for traditional broadcast radio, they're just seeing nothing but decline, just as we see in print magazines and print newspapers and so on. And no strong, easy-to-understand business model is coming up behind it. So instead, you're seeing people scrambling and scrapping because they know there's an audience, they know there's a tremendous passion and interest in the content, they just can't figure out how to get people to pay for it.
Well, Mark, I appreciate that. It's fascinating. Congratulations
Genius.
On the work you're doing.
Absolutely.
And really, we'd love, at some point down the road, love to get you on at least one more time before the election, if you can. And,
when he's promoting the book.
Yeah, come on with the book.
When you're promoting the book. Please come on Absolutely. When you want to promote the book. We'd love that. Mark Fisher from The Washington Post, thank you very much.
Thank you.
That's it. That's Mark. And really, what great questions, guys. Just a lot of fun to talk about this. This just, even when he's talking about it seriously, I can't help but laugh. Have you ever seen anything like this?
No.
It's It's quality entertainment. Also, I don't know how the country's going to do, but it's quality entertainment.
I think he said it best, a sea change. Yeah. He's won. He's won even if he loses, right? Yeah. He's changed. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's changed the rules.
And he's sitting in an office with three helpers, and he doesn't know what to do next.
And I think anybody that would underestimate him is insane at this point. It is going to be fascinating to watch the summer play out, but I'm still scared out of my mind.
Listen to the tapes. The tapes will make your day. And it's
listen
not,
to the tapes.
The tapes in itself. The tapes in themselves. And I'm listening. And you know how I feel about talking politics. But I am laughing.
Out loud.
I am laughing
out
loud.
Why we booked him on this show.
It is great.
Not fall into the same category as a regular political interview.
Great shtick.
Too funny.
If you listen to the tapes, if you go to WashingtonPost.com, they will actually, you know, where it's hard to understand, they put the subtitles in like on Honey Boo Boo. But the thing that is so great, the whole time it sounds like the spokesman is doing everything within his power not to say me.
Mike O'Mara, Radio Entertainment.